You're listening to Upon Further Review on the Raiders Podcast Network. Here's your host, Eddie Pascal.
Raider Nation, we have done it. The 2020 NFL Draft is in the books. The silver and black waltzed and mamboed and tangoed their way through the seven rounds and picked up seven players in this year's iteration of the first virtual draft. And it was a doozy. Eddie Pascal joined by producer Trav. And I could not be more excited to welcome back in our junior draft analyst. After 24 hours away, I know he's a busy man, but Booby Martin is back in the mix. And KMM, how you doing, brother?
I'm exhausted, brother, as I know we all are.
Oh, yeah. Before we get this going, Travy, can we crack a couple cold ones real quick just for us to get this thing rocking, please? Yes, there it is. We deserve those and about two dozen more for what has happened the past 72 hours. And dude, my energy is low, boys. It is dwindling. On a scale of 1 to 10, I'm at like a, 2.75 at the moment. What are you at, KMM?
Oh boy. I don't even know if my barometer or my scale is working. It's on the fritz, man. I don't know what's up from down. It still might be the fourth round for all I know.
Oh man, it was a doozy. But the good news, we'll stop our complaining. The good news is this team really addressed some needs. And KMM, before we talk about today, because listen, we're gonna recap day three of the draft. Before we do that though, I didn't get to talk to you last night, but can you imagine how excited I was when Tanner Muse? He says on his call,
the great Tanner Muse,
that he's a special teams war daddy. Oh,
I don't know if he could have phrased that any better for you.
Kyle, what do all elite teams have? Can you just remind me once?
Great special teamers.
It's true. It is 100% true, man. People forget about teams. And as our resident special teams advocate, I'm going to make sure that is not the case. I promise you.
I will say, Eddie.
Oh, hit me, Kale.
Not to interrupt you. I apologize. But given how big of a special teams fan you are, I'm happy to say, though, that we didn't draft the special teams player of the year. Are you familiar with who this man is?
I'm not.
It was brought to our attention earlier that our social media czar, Matt Walks, threw in a link that the New England Patriots drafted the special teams player of the year. And he has a 3-percenter tattoo.
Yeah, that's a dicey scenario to be in, especially in 2020, brother. But on a happier note, things that I love today, the silver and black. Well, naturally, I love that we only had two picks today because my feelings about day three of the NFL draft are well documented. I don't need to get into them. But we had two picks and really, in all seriousness, filled two needs and two things that two areas that we were looking to have filled. First up at pick number 109 in the fourth round, John Simpson, an interior lineman, a guard from Clemson. And you know how much, KMM, I wanted some depth on the interior line, and we got it.
Oh, yeah, in a big way. I mean, the guard position is crucial. Gabe Jackson, he was out for 6 weeks last year, missed some critical time during training camp because of an injury he sustained when we had the joint practice with the Lambs, the mighty Los Angeles Lambs. But the offensive line, plenty strong, plenty of dogs up front. But we had to get some more bodies down there just in the event that Richie Incognito or Gabe Jackson, for whatever reason, suffer another injury. Gabe Jackson's only 28 years old. But Richie Incognito's not a young buck anymore.
He's 36.
So, yeah, but he's still contributing, still producing at a high level. So John Simpson's going to be able to learn a lot from a lot of really talented offensive lineman.
Absolutely. And you essentially hit all my bullet points, KMM, where going into today, I told Travis last night that I wanted depth on the offensive line and the defensive line. And we got that because, as you said, you can never have enough depth. And especially when you're looking at our interior line, the way that it's set up now, Gabe, not an old man by any stretch of the imagination, but has dealt with his fair share of injuries the past couple of years. Like, let's be honest, he hasn't played a full 16 games in, I believe, three seasons. And the great Rich Incognito, who was, let's be honest, stellar when he was on the field last year for the Raiders, is 36 years old. He's not getting any younger. So the fact that we were able to add some young talent a guy in John Simpson who probably won't have to start next year, probably going to be in that interior mix, but you give him a little time to sit down, a little time to learn the game. And then you, like you said, if an injury does arise, you're ready to put him in there. You're ready to have him go to work. And hopefully the level of play from your Richie Incognitos and your Gabe Jacksons to your Denzel Goods and John Simpsons is not that steep. So after that, another position of need filled for the Silver and Black. Double M and Grudog go after Amik Robertson at number 139 in the fourth round. And Kyle, if I was reading your Twitter feed correctly, was it someone who said that he was perhaps the best slot corner in the draft this year?
It felt like every draft analyst said that Amik Robertson was the best slot corner in the draft this year. Immediately after the Raiders made their pick, Mel Kiper and Daniel Jeremiah, who were both on the broadcast, had nothing but positive things to say. They raved about the kid, an absolute ball hawk, which is something the Raiders need to improve at. They've struggled to get interceptions and force them over the last few years. So Mayock's really hoping that Amik can come in and kind of be a solution to that problem. But yes, lots of people on Twitter were giving the Raiders an A-plus draft grade, an A draft grade for this guy. A lot of people said there's no way that he should have dropped that far. The only reason why is that he had a groin injury that he had surgery on. And so people were wary of whether or not he was fully healthy. But he said during his conference call that he's at 120% ready to go.
Yeah. Another thing to keep in mind is when we were listening to Mike Mayock talk about him on the call, he goes, listen, if this guy was 2 inches taller, he's nowhere near falling into that fourth round. But like you said, the injury, perhaps not the physical specimen that, you know, people kind of covet in today's NFL, hasn't fallen to the fourth. But man, what a steal, especially if he's able to kind of produce the way that he did in college. But we've gone through it all, gentlemen. We've gone from pick one to pick 742. And the one thing that's kind of stood out to me in just looking at our draft class in its totality, Derek is going to have weapons next year. This team, John Gruden, Mike Mayock, went in, and we talked a lot. We have talked so much over the past couple months, especially since the season ended, about the plan that Gruden and Mayock have had and how it's been very calculated. There hasn't been a lot of reaching. There hasn't been a lot of moves that make you kind of scratch your head and go, I don't know if I get that one. And that kind of bore out today as well. But you look at what has happened the past 72 hours especially, and boy, this offense is going to be a lot of fun if everyone stays healthy in 2020.
Yeah, I mean, Derek Carr is definitely going to be the guy going forward. Yes, there will be some competition from Marcus Mariota, but this is Derek's offense. This is year three for him. There's no more excuses. There's no reason why he shouldn't be able to produce at the highest level. He was a former MVP candidate at one point, led the Raiders back to the postseason for the first time in 14 years. He's got plenty of weapons now. A solid running back who's youthful and ready to tout the ball as many times as he needs to. And he's got speed stretching the field. Derek's loved to throw the ball deep in years past. And let's see if he brings that back. Even if he doesn't, even if it's a simple slant route over the middle, Henry Ruggs is going to be able to take that 80 yards, no problem.
Yeah, and the guy that I keep thinking about a lot too, and I don't want to say that we're forgetting about him because I think that's too harsh of a word, but dude, we're going to have a healthy Tyrell Williams in 2020 as well. Now, I know we have all these new, you know, brand new shiny toys, but let's not forget that less than a year ago, before the injury bug came up and bit Tyrell, that dude was putting up big numbers that first month of 2019. So if with him ready to go, he's not going to get as much attention as he did last year. Like this offense, if granted, you know, the biggest if of all ifs, if all these dudes stay healthy, man, it is going to be a lot of fun to see them go to work in the fall.
Yeah, I'm excited to see how the Raiders use Lynn Bowden Jr. also. You know, the versatility that he offers. It's funny, I don't know if you guys saw the video the Raiders posted on social media of the punter who was Lynn Bowden in high school returning a punt, a botched snap, 108 yards all the way from one side of the field to the other, evading defenders left and right. I watched that video probably 4 days before we drafted him. Had no idea who that was, but I thought the play was incredible. He does it all. I mean, his athleticism is second to none. The Raiders need help at punt return. He did a little bit of that in college. So I'm excited to see how we get better in special teams, Eddie.
You know, speaking of Lynn Bowden Jr., though, is there really anything that he doesn't do? We're going to list him as a running back. You can line him up out wide. He can be in the slot. He's going to return punts. He's played quarterback, so he's probably your emergency quarterback. He's probably your emergency punter, too, if anything were to happen to AJ Cole in a game. Like, in all seriousness, like, is he the most this is going to sound crazy. Is he the most versatile guy that came out in this draft?
I mean, he won, though I can't think of the official name for the award, but he won the 2019 Nation's Most Versatile Player of the Year award.
So like, I guess so.
He legitimately was awarded the being the best and most versatile. Like, not the best, but the most versatile player in college football.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be a lot of fun to see him paired up with John Gruden and kind of how the Grudog is able to manipulate and twist and put these dudes in different positions to succeed. But defensively, I don't know if we – so I think going into this defensively, we expected a corner to be taken. I didn't know if we necessarily thought it was going to be in the first round, if it was going to be later in the draft. But Paul Gunther, all things considered, has got to be pretty pleased with what he was able to get this weekend as well.
Oh, yeah. I mean, Paul Gunther's been clamoring for some new toys for a long time now. Free agency, he got Corey Littleton, Nick, I'm going to struggle with his name forever.
Nick K.
Kowski? Yeah, Nick K. Easy. He got Demaryius Randall at defensive back. He's got lots of new weapons now for himself. And he's going to be able to unleash Max Crosby and Cleveland Ferrell in year two. Having the help at cornerback from Damon Arnett and Trayvon Mullen is going to make things easier on Crosby and Ferrell. They're going to be able to get after the quarterback for a couple, you know, even if it's just a second longer, half a second longer. Having those guys who are physical, just eager to get after their opponent is going to free it up for everyone.
Yeah, I mean, I'm excited because we've talked about it a lot, man. We've been pretty honest where that defense last year was not good enough for this team to win meaningful football games. Now, were they better at the end of the year than they were at the beginning of the year? Absolutely. Did they have a marked improvement, call it, over the last 5 or 6 weeks? Yeah, I think that's fair to say too. But they had to get better. The linebacking core had to get better. That's been addressed in a big way. They needed some depth at DB. They needed to get younger at DB. Check and check. Now, I would have liked them to see maybe add another edge rusher over the weekend. Like, that was kind of on like my wish list, but they didn't elected not to go that route. But like you said, you're going to have Max and Cleland in year two, Carl Nassib. I mean, you are going to have guys that are, for the most part, still young and ascending in their career that hopefully, if they're all able to stay healthy, they're all able to get some semblance of continuity before the season starts. And officially, man, I mean, it's, you don't want to feel, you never want to proclaim yourself that you're a winner. No one wants to win the offseason. But I don't know if there's anything on our checklist that we had headed into this offseason that hasn't been addressed by Mayock and Gruden.
No, and I mean, yesterday or maybe even this morning, I don't remember. All these days blend together now. I tweeted.
Yeah, what is time at this point?
I tweeted, you know, if you're a Raider Nation, like, how could you not be happy with what the Raiders did in the draft? They addressed practically every major need on both sides of the ball. And there are a couple of people who tweeted at me like, oh, defensive line, ? People are forgetting that the Raiders signed Malik Collins, interior defensive lineman from the Dallas Cowboys. And if you haven't watched him play or seen his tape, go watch his highlights. They're impressive. And he's going to be reunited with Rod Marinelli, who's the defensive line coach. So,
I feel like we haven't talked about enough over the past couple of weeks because we've had so much going on. But we could do a whole show just on what Marinelli is going to mean to this defense in 2020. But go ahead.
No, that's a great point. We definitely haven't discussed him a lot enough, but he's Gruden's guy, one of the most well-respected defensive line coaches in the NFL, and he knows how to get his players to get after the quarterback. So while the Raiders might not have drafted a defensive tackle, they have Malik Collins, they still have a young PJ Hall, Mo Hirsch Jr., they have plenty of bodies in there. So it's not like you're going to get a bunch of scrubs who are playing defensive line. This is going to be a big year of growth for the Raiders, and I think everything's trending upward.
Yeah, absolutely. And you think you brought up Mo and PJ, and in 2020, we're going to get the best versions of those guys because Gruden has made it very clear, and so has Mike Mayock. These guys got to produce now. This is year three. This is not time for development and, hey, we're going to be better in 2021. Like, no. For Mo and for PJ and those guys on the inside, like, it's time to rock now, man. I mean, you got a new coach, a new defensive line coach coming in, and the expectations are high, and they are not going to be dipping at any point throughout the season.
No, not at all. And Mayock said it during the combine, Rod Marinelli expects 110% on every single snap. And I think that was kind of a wake-up call. Not that he was deliberately, or I mean, I guess he was deliberately, but not that he was taking, you know, an overly aggressive shot at the young defensive lineman, but he was trying to kick him in the butt. And I think the only person who really brings it, I think the only person who brought it that was clear every single snap was Max Crosby last year. I don't know if there's anyone who would deny that. The kid has the utmost confidence in himself, his ability, and that's what the Raiders love about him. He brings effort on every single play, and Rod Marinelli is going to want that out of every single person lining up.
Yeah, and you know, it's like an old cliche, and it's, you know, it's something that our parents probably told us growing up, but it's like, there's a lot of things that you can't control in this world, right? You can't control. I mean, look at us. We're all living this virtual life because of this pandemic, something completely out of our control. But the one thing that you can control are two things. You can control your attitude and you can control your effort. And Max Crosby brought an A1 attitude, and he brought effort snap to snap, quarter to quarter, game to game last year. So if we could elevate that entire position group to bring that effort and that energy like Max did a year ago. And just like you, Kyle, I'm weary of calling anyone out and saying that they didn't do that. But I think you brought up a great point where it was just so evident that Max did that. Like, you watched him play, and it didn't matter if we were up by 100, if we were down by 100. He's bringing that same effort, that same high energy. And so if we can get that as a collective in 2020, man, I mean, I know you still got teams like the Chiefs and dynamic offenses like the Broncos, who I think got a lot better over the past weekend. But man, it's going to be a lot of fun. I'm excited to see how this all shakes out in the fall.
Yeah, to piggyback off that, I think the Denver Broncos definitely got better over the weekend. So did the Chargers. I mean, their first round picks were Justin Herbert.
I mean, so did the Chiefs, as scary as that is.
Yeah, they got the LSU running back, and they poached DeAndre Washington from us. So I think just the AFC West in general really upped its game. Everyone's in an arms race against the Chiefs. Everyone needs to have offensive weapons that can contend with the high flyers that the Chiefs have. And that was clearly the priority for everyone.
Yeah, I mean, it's funny because that's literally the term that I had written down for what's happening in the division. It's a legit arms race. You know what I mean? It's like, all right, you got this. What am I going to get? Oh, you have one of those? I'm going to get two of them. You have three speedy receivers? I need four and two DBs that can cover yours. Like, I mean, there is a definite theme in this division. And man, the AFC West, when these guys get dancing next year, ooh, it's going to be a lot of fun to watch, man.
Yeah, I know. It's going to be, I mean, Chiefs, you have to defer to them. They're the champions. They're the reigning Super Bowl champions of the league. You have to assume that they're going to be in contention for the top spot in the division. But whether it's the Raiders, whoever fighting for the top spot, or the wild card spot, it's going to be a very contended 8 seed. Well, I guess the playoff format's changing. That's a whole other element now.
Yeah. Wow. I mean, listen, I'll tell you this right now, and I'm not a big guy on proclamations, but you're gonna get at least two playoff teams from this division next year. I'm telling you right now, you're gonna get at least two.
I take that bet 10 times out of 10.
That's easy money. We should ask the Macho King what he thinks about that bet. But yeah, that's easy money, baby. So going into this past weekend, outside of all the players and addressing the team needs and all that hoopla, I think we were all really intrigued to see how this virtual draft was going to turn out. And I'm going to be honest, I kind of liked it. I didn't like the fact that we were all separated and we're all, you know, doing this on Zoom and FaceTime and all that. But in terms of the draft itself, I didn't hate it.
No, I didn't either. And I think in general, not, you know, that this pandemic is brought any positivity. It's a very real and serious matter that people need to understand is impacting the entire globe. But I think it's how people realize, especially in the sports world, that like a lot of this can be done remotely. Like a lot of our jobs can be done remotely. And the fact that the draft was completely virtual, everyone was in their homes, I think it was cool to see all the draft picks at home with their families. Yes, it's cool to see them take the stage, but the dabs with Roger Goodell are always pretty awkward. The forced interviews with Deion Sanders after are always kind of awkward. They're not always, it never really is like smooth. And I feel like, weirdly enough, the virtual draft was smoother than the normal draft.
Yeah, dude. I mean, I kind of agree with everything that you said, and I wish I didn't, so we have a little more fodder for debate. But yeah, I mean, the virtual draft, the one thing that I will take away as a huge L from this virtual draft, it was too much Goodell. It was way too much. I didn't need that much Raj. I didn't need him. I was telling Trav last night, I don't need him asking for the boos, beckoning the boos. I don't need him trying to get the crowd hyped. Like, sit down, Raj. Read the card and sit down. But the one thing that I did like a lot is that we weren't subjugated to the god-awful tradition of the quote-unquote creative day three picks. Oh, my God.
They're so bad.
Dude, there were no talking parrots. There were no people jumping out of planes. There were no, you know, people jumping out of cakes. Like, dude, I hate that. You know how I felt about day three of the draft. And my feelings remain largely unchanged, KMM. But the fact that we did not have to deal with that, I am going to call that a W.
Day three, honestly, is probably my favorite day of the draft this
year. Well, that's because you're a real evaluator, and I'm not.
But I agree with you. The day three is usually painful. Like, it takes forever to get through because of all the shenanigans. And it's so funny that you bring up the parrot for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, because every time I think of corny, creative drafts, I think of that exact segment. It's the first thing that comes to mind. But I have a bit of piece of information for you that I think you'll appreciate, because your hatred of Roger Goodell stems so deeply.
Talk to me.
So I know none of us are really barstool guys, quote unquote, but as you're aware, Dave Portnoy, the president of Barstool, has an ongoing feud with Roger Goodell, right? Everyone knows this. He's created the clown t-shirts, outstanding stuff. Barstool banned from all kind of NFL events like the combine. However, as part of the COVID-19 relief fund, the NFL has a bidding auction opportunity where you can try to bid on an opportunity to watch a game with Roger Goodell in his fan cave and win two tickets to a game next year. Guess who has the highest bid right now?
Oh boy, is it the gentleman from Barstool?
It sure is. He said he's willing to spend seven figures in order to make it happen. And you know who's going to encourage that? I am. I would love to see that.
Now, listen, I love a good vendetta as much as the next guy. I really do. And I assume the money goes to charity, right? Like, this isn't going in Raj's pocket.
Everything, every donation that's made, whatever the total is, the NFL will match those donations. So if Dave Portnoy of Barstool Sports donates $1 million, the NFL will match his $1 million.
Okay.
At least how I understand it.
Okay, I'm good with that, man. Because listen, I hate in a lot of things, but I love helping people, man. I love a good charity. You know, I love helping the kids. I love helping the folks that are not as fortunate as us. So if we can do something good, if we can raise a little money or a lot of money to help that out, I'll be pleased with that. I will be very, very pleased. Do you think? And I'm curious, because it sounds like, if you're reading the Twitter, that this was by and large a pretty big success, the virtual aspect of it. Do you foresee, if you were a betting man, that I don't think we'll ever go fully virtual, but do you think there's a world where we have like a partially virtual draft going forward?
That is a good question.
Because I don't think the first round will ever be virtual again, because they want to have the, you know, the spectacle. They want the guys to be there in the suits and to have all that. But I wonder if they do like a day three virtual going forward, or try something like that out.
I don't know. I think the NFL just in general makes too much money from the draft. And I think hosting the draft in cities, I think the cities reap a lot of benefits from that as well. The longer
I'm saying if you were to only do one day virtual. So if you were to have like a Thursday, Friday in person and then maybe cut down a Saturday, I don't know. I'm just spitballing here, but.
No, I hear you. I would love that. I would legitimately love that idea. But I don't think the mayors of the cities that the draft ends up in or whatever, Roger Goodell or the NFL, want to risk that just because, you know, it's a great money-making opportunity. It's great for tourism, great for people to check out the NFL. I hope there is a way that they can find to make it virtual, Eddie, because I thoroughly enjoyed it. And you know, before the draft started, I thought it was going to be a snooze fest.
You did.
I thought it was going to be the most boring draft ever. But it wasn't. It was the complete opposite.
Yeah, I mean, it was... I think it's fair to say we were collectively pleasantly surprised by what happened over the past 3 days. And a credit to all the people at ESPN, the network, and ABC who made sure that was the case. But guys, before we get out of here, I'm going to ask each of you. I'll start with you, Cayman. Favorite pick from the draft? Not necessarily the pick that you think is going to have the biggest impact, or the pick that is going to put up the craziest stats or the best social media's, you know, viral moment guy. But what's your favorite? Like, which of the picks do you look at and go, yeah, I like that a lot?
Obviously, you're referring to the Raiders picks, right? Not just like all of the picks.
Kyle, no, I don't need to know about what the Packers did in the third because they got a corner that you coveted. No, KMM.
I did love, however, speaking of the Packers, I did love that they picked Jordan Love just for a little bit of controversy in Green Bay. I appreciated that. But for the Raiders, I'm going to have to say my favorite pick was probably Bryan Edwards. I think Henry Ruggs, I love that pick, honestly. Speed, everything that you're going to want out of wide receiver one. Very excited about that. But I like Bryan Edwards just because he was severely overlooked. The Chris Godwin comparison from Daniel Jeremiah has me fired up. If he becomes, he's going to have to compete with Tyrell Williams for that X receiver position. But if he's able to take that over, really grow into the comparison that DJ made for him, the Raiders receiving corps for the future is very exciting. And we got him for a steal. He was supposed to be a second round talent, dropped to the third round.
Well said. Travi, what do you got? What pick do you like?
I mean, no surprise here, Ruggs. That speed kills.
Well said. That was in and out. Producer Trav. I think of the picks that I like the most and having a night to sleep on it now. Dude, I love this Bowden pick, man. I love it just because we're going to get so weird. Gruden's going to be in the laboratory just crafting up crazy things for him. I want to see a world where we have AJ Cole and him both out there to punt. And maybe we do AJ throws it to Lynn. Lynn, as your emergency quarterback, throws it deep to a streaking Henry Ruggs. Like, I just think he's the kind of guy where you can do so many weird, fun things with him that I can't wait to see what it looks like. Like, I really am just genuinely, as a fan first, just really intrigued to see what Gruden and Ole can bring out of this young fella. So I think that's the one I'm going to go for me. Also, a close second is the lineman from today, Mr. Simpson, because, God, I love linemen. I love line depth, Kyle. The big boys up front never get enough love, but they are crucial. So he'll be my second pick. But I mean, really, we kind of talked about at the top where all seven picks this weekend, all filled the need, all logical, all made sense, all did something to help this team get better. And really, coming out of draft weekend, you just want to feel good. You want to be optimistic and say, hey, we're better than when this draft started on Thursday evening. So I think it's a net positive.
Yeah, I would agree. Also, kudos to Mr. Simpson for being the first male in his family to receive a college degree.
Hey, good for him, man. Good for him. As three gentlemen with college degrees, I'm glad you brought that up. Can you imagine how hard it would be to get a degree while also being a full-time student athlete? Because I limped to the finish line. I limped to the finish line at the University of Oregon, like really limped. And I was just a dude. Like, can you imagine if you had to go out and play on Saturdays?
No, not at all. You have to manage your practice schedule. That's a whole other topic we could get into. College athletes, their work to the grindstone.
Yeah, they're taken advantage of. I'll say it. They're taken advantage of for their institutions. But man, I can't imagine like having to go to a place like Clemson, right? Where you're literally playing for national titles every year and that's the expectation. And you're a key contributor on a national title team while also trying to be a 20-year-old college kid, while also trying to go to class and get a degree. Oh, brother, that is rough.
You gotta have a lot of natural talent.
Yeah, oh yeah. You gotta. Do you think these guys like I know what I would do after a huge win? Do you think these guys like hit the town? Or are they just like so conditioned to, hey, we gotta practice on Sunday afternoon?
They for sure hit the town. I remember specifically when I was still a student at Oregon, the main bar, Taylor's on 13th. Everyone was making a huge fuss because Dylan Brooks, now the Memphis Grizzlies, Jordan Bell, former Warriors legend, got a ring. DeForest Buckner, that car. You hear that every time.
I'm hearing it. Keep rolling though, Kyle. I love it. This is the beauty of the quality of our production, where you're sitting in your couch, And you have this gentleman who just rips by your house all the time, blasting his tunes.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. DeForest Buckner, that's who I left off on, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, DeForest Buckner and Pharaoh Brown, another Raiders
legend.
Oh,
God. And I'm glad we could shout out Pharaoh Andre on today's episode. That's it. That today's a good day.
Yeah, oh, yeah. They all showed up at Taylor's, and it was right after the game, immediately after. It was a Saturday night. Everyone was fired up. Place was packed. Defoe shows up with his platoon of people, his entourage, and just got after it. So, yes, I think college athletes are doing just as much shenanigans as any other college kid.
I sure hope so. I remember before we get out of here, I'll do my one tale of Oregon student athletes. It was my freshman year, I think. Either my freshman or my sophomore year. I was pretty young, and I was at a house party, and one of my friends was also at this house party, and he was what's the politically correct term? He was hanging out. He was spending some time with a young female acquaintance of his, and we were just kind of at this house party, and I go to leave, and I was like, oh, I should probably tell him, you know, hey, I'll see you later. It's good seeing you. And he just has this look of defeat on his face. And I was like, you good, man? Like, what's going on? He goes, well, things were going pretty well. I think I was going to ask that girl for her phone number. And then Kenyon Barner showed up. And so that story ended very quickly for him. That little adventure that he went on it ended prematurely. We'll put it that way.
Can't win them all.
Can't win them all, man. Can't win them all. But we won this draft. Us as a collective, us as an organization, I feel really good about this draft. And I know it's funny because everyone this time of the year, this is like optimism season, right? It's like Christmas. Nothing is bad in the world. Well, I don't want to say that nothing's bad in the world. But in the football world, you feel good about what your team did. You got better. You did what you needed to do. You filled those needs. And that's exactly what happened this week. So I'm feeling good, man. Feeling ready to rock. I'm feeling like I need an ice cold bruchacho and to go to sleep. That is what I'm feeling like. So I think that's what I'm going to do. So for Eddie Pascal, producer Trav, the great KMM, who I missed you, brother. It wasn't the same without you yesterday, but to have you back in the mix was a Saturday blessing. So for all of us, we thank you deeply, humbly, and oh so sincerely. Stay safe, keep washing those hands, and we will see you guys next time on Upon Further Review.
Thanks for listening to this edition of Upon Further Review on the Raiders Podcast Network.